I'm visiting Penang, and Penang is a very quaint island in the north of Malaysia. And from here, you can get here by airplane, which is about 45 minutes flight from Kuala Lumpur, or you can get here by bus or by car, which is about 4.5-5 hours if you're driving at a pretty normal to fast pace. Anyways, I visited this quaint island city many, many times, and I'm here again with friends today for 1 or 2 days because we're shooting paranormal. But we're riding down the streets now. Excuse me. We're riding down the streets now, down the quaint old streets, and it's very quiet, it's very peaceful and very nice. You can see all the old buildings. You can see the street is very clean and very nice, and we're on this kind of a trishaw where there's three wheels and there's one guy pedaling the wheel, and they take you through the city, they take you through the historic areas on a tour, and it's just so much more pleasant than taxis because you kind of get air and it's not hot, and you're sitting outside and you can just see everything live. Anyways, I wanted to share a story. You know, when I met Song Rinpoche in the U.S. in my late teens, I asked him if I can be an actor or a singer. And Song Rinpoche was really famous for his divinations. So Song Rinpoche did his renowned, accurate divinations, and he said to me, anything that you do in front of the camera, you will be successful. So I said, does that mean singing? Does it mean acting? And he said, anything. As long as you're in front of the camera, not behind, you'll be very, very successful. Then I said, how about if I take ordination to become a monk? And Sarangji said, if you become a monk, he did a divination. He said, if you become a monk, you're going to be even more beneficial. So either way, you'll make it, and it's up to you. So I said to Sarangji right then and there that I am going to be a monk. If you feel and your divination says it's going to be more beneficial, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go with it. So he was very happy with the choice. He didn't force me toward anything, and he cut my hair, a strand of it, and he did a prayer, and it's called Japu, this ritual, to preordain, bless me. So for years I couldn't get any money, and I had a lot of bills, and I was charging up on my credit card, and I was working, and you know, I had $1,000 or $2,000 US credit card bills. Plus I hadn't gotten my passport, and I don't have a ticket to go to the US. I'm sorry, I didn't have a ticket to go from the US to India. So what happened was, when I was around 22 years old, it's been 3, 4, 5 years since I made the promise to Song Rinpoche. And after I made the promise to Song Rinpoche, he said, he went back, you know, to India, and I stayed back in America. So I was trying to make money, and I was trying to pay my bills and trying to save up money for India, and I was just not getting anywhere, and I was in America for 4 or 5 years. So finally, when I was around 21, 22, I was in the center in Tipton Darjeeling in the kitchen. And we just had a talk ceremony, and I'd finished, and I was cleaning up the gomba, and I was cleaning up the vacuuming and putting the cushions away, because I lived at the center. I lived there with Geshe Thudum Gelton. I lived there with Robert Stone, and I lived there with another lady there called Toby Rhodes. And we all lived in the center, and our rental helped the center, because the center, you know, was on donation basis. So what happened was, one day I was in the kitchen at the soak, and I was washing, cleaning up, and Robert Stone came. Robert Stone has passed away since then. And he asked me, Robert Stone asked me, so when are you going to go to India? When are you going to be a monk? You made a promise to Song Rinpoche. And he asked me in a way kind of like quite direct and firm and slightly questioning. And Robert's my good friend, and he's a very nice person. So I said to Robert, look, I want to go to India. I want to be a monk. I didn't forget my promise to Saramichi. You know, I didn't forget my promise. And, but I don't have enough money. And Robert Stone said to me, look, if you were to go to India, how much would it cost you? And what do you need to pay off? So I calculated it. I said, I got to pay off my credit card bills. I got to get a ticket. I got to go get my passport. And I need, you know, this and this and this. And Robert said to me, okay, how much? And I said, oh, about 5,000 US. And I said to, and Robert said to me, if you had the money, would you go? I said, I would go immediately. He says, no hesitations. I said, no. So he says, here's the money. And I was like, wow. Robert wrote me a check. He gave it to me. And you know what I did? From California, I flew back to New Jersey and I got my passport. Because, you know, I had to go to the courthouse there and to sign up and do the procedures. I paid off my credit card. I gave him my notice at work. And the next thing I knew, I was at the airport with my teacher, Geshe Thulam Gelson, and some of his students. One of them, of course, was Robert, and I was very indebted to him. And I was flying to India. I flew to India, and I arrived in Delhi, and I stayed in one of Geshe Thulam Gelson's students' houses. And from there, I went to Dharamsala, and I waited for about a month, because I went to Dharamsala in around October, and I waited till around late October, and I waited till around early December, so about a month and a few weeks, for ordination. And what happened was I got ordination with His Holiness, and that was an incredible experience. And it was 3 hours together with His Holiness Dalai Lama and two other boys who were to become ordained with me, and we got ordained together. And after ordination, I went to Nepal. And in Nepal, after I went to Nepal for about a month, in January, February, around that time, 1988, I went down to Ganden Monastery. And I registered in Ganden Monastery. And the abbot at that time was Khyentse Jamba Yishi Rinpoche. And the Gyekyu was Geshe Losang Wanggyal. And the Umze, or the lead chanter at that time, was Geshe Losang Tenzin, very renowned masters. And I entered this monastery, and it was just overwhelming. So when I was there, I entered Saramji's house, and I lived in Saramji's house. And I had a little room by the with the cows. It was basically a cow shed that leaked a lot, and it was very small. And I'm not complaining, but that was kind of my place. And what happened was I met my teachers there again. Saramji had already passed away. I met Lathi Rimji again. And he was very happy that I made it to the monastery. And I, you know, continue what I was doing. I have to excuse me, there's some animals here. Om Arabazanadi, 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 Om Arabazanadi. So animals to be slaughtered. So I wanted to recite some mantra to them. In any case, one lama, his name was Sokpo Rinpoche, and he was an old Mongolian lama, old Mongolian lama, very renowned, and he was a very great disciple of Trigyan Rinpoche. And in the U.S., my mother had told me that that's her teacher, and that if I needed any help, go and see him. Well, when I was in Nepal, I went to see him to say hello and offer my respects, and he didn't forget me. Then I went back to Ganden. As I told you, in 1988, I was in Ganden. And then a few years later, 2-3 years later, I got a letter from Sokpo Rinpoche. And he basically told me, actually it was a telegram, and he basically told me, come up to Nepal. I want to introduce you to someone very important. So I went up there. And I went for a divination with Lathi Rinpoche. And Lathi Rinpoche said that, you know, it's very good for you to go on this trip. You should go to Nepal and meet Sokpo Rinpoche. My divination comes out good. It'll be very beneficial for you. So I listened to Lathi Rinpoche's advice. And I went up to Nepal that I met Sokhar Rinchi, and within 1-2 days, I met one elderly, not old, but elder senior Tibetan man, and his name was Mr. Lobsang Gyatso. And he was introduced to me, and he told me things about me and my childhood that no one else knew. And then Sokhar Rinchi in his house told me that this man was my father. And I was like, wow. And I was overwhelmed, because for the first time in my life, I met my natural father. And he told me that he is an ex-monk of Drepung Monastery, and he has 2 other sons and 1 other daughter. One of his sons is dying to meet me, and he wanted to come to Ganden to see what I was doing, what's happening. So after I met him, things changed for me, because he helped me a little bit financially. And then I went down to Ganden Monastery. When I went down to Ganden Monastery, my father flew in, you know, a few months later. And he went to meet the abbot, and he meet everyone. And, I was very proud, because, you know, somebody cared about me. So I went there. He came and he visited me, and he said that he built a house for me, because I was living in a very small place, and he was very sad for me to live in a place that was very leaky. So, I like this area. We should go real slow. It's very nice. We should go very slow. It's very, very nice. But, you know, I was, he said he wants to build a house for me. And I was like, wow. So I asked land from the monastery, and I rented a piece of land from the monastery, which wasn't very hard. And my father sent money, and he had a, basically, 4-bedroom, 1-toilet kitchen and hall built for me in Ganden, with water and electricity, which is a very big deal, okay? And then as I was moving out, one other monk told me that I should invite Khensa Rinchi to come stay with me. Khensa Rinchi that time was the abbot, because he was also living in Song Labrang in a small room. So I went to Khensa Rinchi, and I asked him, would he like to move in with me? And if he can move in with me, I will, you know, take care of his needs, and I will serve him, and I'll be his assistant and his secretary and whatever is necessary. And Khensa Rinchi immediately agreed. He said that he would like to move into my house, and he would like to be with me. And I was so honored, and I was so thrilled. So I gave the biggest room in my house, which is 1-story, to Khensa Rinchi. And with a little bit of money I had, I put vinyl on the floor, and I made some furniture and curtains and you know, wardrobe area for him to put his robes and all that stuff. And Khensa Rinchi moved in. I moved in with another, you know, 5-6 students, and we moved into my own house in Ganden. And that house is called Temlanrang, Gilik Rapge. And it's still there. So what happened was, I became Khensa Rinchi's assistant, and I became his student, of course, and I became his gardener and his cook and his attendant when he traveled. And it was a great honor. And being that he was an abbot, he has to go to Dharamsala sometimes for teachings with the Dalai Lama. He has to travel to other parts of India. He has to go to Sarah Monastery, Drepung Monastery. You know, he has his official duties as the abbot of Ganden Shatsi Monastery, and I always accompanied him. So I would take care of his travel plans. I would purchase his tickets. You know, I would get his train tickets. And whatever we needed to get, I was there. I would pack his bags. I would carry his items. And, you know, I became his main assistant wherever we traveled. And like I said, it was just such a beautiful, sentimental, wonderful time, the closest I had. And I lived with Khensa Rinchi for over 8 years, you know. Recently, he has passed away, and as I'm speaking now, Khensa Rinchi is in Tukdam, or death meditation. He hasn't come out. He's been in for 8 days already. In any case, so he would travel all over the place, and I would go with him as his official assistant. One time, the Dalai Lama had won the Nobel Peace Prize. And we were all going up to Dharamsala. We're all going to Delhi to celebrate. So all the abbots and the dignitaries and the ex-abbots and all that, we all took trains up to Delhi. And Lati Rinchi, Khensa Rinchi, myself, and Lati Rinchi's assistant, and one other monk, we all traveled together from the monastery to Hubli, which was a nearby city, 1 hour away. From Hubli, we take the train, which is basically 3 days and 2 nights to Delhi. Then in Delhi, we went to the airport to receive His Holiness Dalai Lama when he flew down, and he landed at the airport and he came out. We were all out there to receive him because we were just so excited and we were so happy that he had won the Nobel Peace Prize. So we were at the airport to receive him. Then after that, we went immediately up to Dharamsala because they were having special celebrations up there. And we went up to celebrate also, you know, the Dalai Lama receiving the Nobel Peace Prize. So when all the celebrations and everything was over, there was a small Dharma talk from His Holiness and we attended. And after that, we all came down from Dharamsala down to Delhi, and from Delhi we need to take train back. And from Delhi back to Hubli, which is the nearest city to the monastery, it's, again, 3 days and 2 nights. So we didn't get first class. You know, we didn't get second class. We got ordinary class. So ordinary class is kind of, you squeeze in onto, you know, one chair that fits 5 people, but sometimes 7 or 8 people fits on there. But at night, we kind of sleep on there. And the train we were on, the window that was next to me couldn't lock. So what happens was that every time the train would stop at a station, which was quite a lot of stations, small villages along the way, it would vibrate. So when it would vibrate, the window would start going up. So when they're going down to the smaller villages, the train would slow down, and inadvertently the window would start going up. And so it's quite annoying because, you know, you're stopping at all these stations, you know, 30, 40 stations along the way, and your window is flapped up. It's the middle of the night. People are getting on and off in the middle of the night. And, you know, they can just stick their hands in and, you know, take whatever. Not that we had much to take. So that night, it was the night before we arrived in Hubli. And, you know, we got the meals and we served Kensurumji. We served Lathirumji. It was such a great pleasure because, can you imagine, I was on a train with Lathirumji and Kensurumji and their assistants and me all this time. And, you know, just with these great lamas and being able to serve them and to get their blankets, put their things away, clean up their area, get their food, get their drinks. I mean, trust me, I loved it. So that night before we went to bed, Lathirumji made a real strange comment on the train. And he pointed his finger at me, Lathirumji, and he said, "Be careful tonight. You might lose your head." He said that in Tibetan. Be careful tonight. You might lose your head. And I'm like, what does that mean? But you know, Lathirumji is quite a jokey type. Kensurumji doesn't really joke a lot. Kensurumji is quite serious. Lathirumji was a jokey type. And well, I'm like, what is he talking about? So I went, you know, I put Lathirumji to bed and we covered him up and make sure he's comfortable. I put Kensurumji to bed. We put Kensurumji to bed. We covered him, make sure he's comfortable. And they slept on the upper bunk and we slept on, you know, the lower bunk below them. And the whole night I woke up like 4, 5, 6 times because the window kept going up and I had to close the window. And sometimes the window would go up when the train is in action, in motion, and it'd be freezing because the wind would be blowing, you know. So I had to keep closing my window. So anyways, what I did was I have a monk bag, and it's made of cloth. And I wrapped the handle of the bag around my neck, and I put the bag behind my head as a pillow, because we don't have a pillow, and it's quite uncomfortable without a pillow. And inside my bag, I had 600 rupees in a cloth wallet, and I had my sadhana book, which I handwritten, and I had, you know, some towels and pens and some notes and my mala and a couple of other things, nothing really precious. But 600 rupees that night, that time is a lot of money. 600 rupees, which is can last me maybe, you know, 1 month. And that's, I didn't have a lot of money. So I went to bed with a bag, the handle of the bag under my neck, and I put the bag under me and I slept. So I woke up in the middle of the night, the train was still, there was a lot of noise because of people going on and off. And guess what? I felt a choking sensation. And when I completely woke up, my bag was outside the window. I mean, there are grills, you know, but the grills are quite big, you know, and my cloth bag was outside the window, and there was a man there pulling my bag, trying to take it away. And I'm choking because the bag handle is around my neck. So he's pulling and pulling, and I woke up, and I'm pulling him back. And because I'm still half asleep, you know, he's pulling, and I'm pulling, he's pulling, and I'm pulling. And guess what? You know, I took it off my neck, and I'm trying to get more traction, and I'm pulling it. And finally, he was much stronger. He pulled my whole bag, and he ran off. And just when he ran off, guess what? The train was starting to move. And I was like, oh, no. There goes my bag. And I was, like, screaming. And the train was going. And the train went faster, and the guy went the opposite direction. The train was going, the train is like going south, and he's running north, and I'm like on the platform. And I said, oh no, you know. So with all the commotion and noise, Lathi Rinchi and Kenshin Rinchi all woke up and said, hey, you know, what's happened? And I told them. And Lathi Rinchi just could not stop laughing. He was laughing and laughing. I mean, can you imagine this old elite abbot emeritus of Ganden Shartse? Okay? His Eminence Kyabji Lathi Rinchi, and you know, he's really a living Buddha, was laughing and laughing and laughing and laughing nonstop. And here I am, a simple monk with no money, my bag was stolen, and I expected some words of consolation or something, and he's laughing at me. And I will admit, and Kenshin Rinchi was laughing along with him, but not as loudly and not as happily and not as, you know, agreeably, but he was laughing. So I was like, wow, this street is beautiful. This really nice street. Anyways, I was like getting a little irritated, but I didn't show it. I didn't express it. I didn't say it. I dare not. You know, I don't dare show kind of disrespect to Lathi Rinchi. But I was really irritated that he was laughing, you know, and I was like, oh, what's so funny? And then Lathi Rinchi was wiping his tears away, and he sat up bolt right, and then he proceeded to talk. And he said to me, I told you, tonight, be careful, you might lose your head. Tonight, be careful, you might lose your head. Didn't I tell you you might lose your head? And he started laughing again. Didn't I tell you that you might lose something? And he was laughing again. And I was like, oh, that's what he meant. And then he was very serious. And he said, all right, now I want you to listen carefully. Whatever has been lost, I want you to make a prayer that whatever has been lost, it will benefit the thief. Get this. Whatever was lost, Lathi Rinchi told me, with Kenshin Rinchi present, may it benefit the thief. And pray that whatever the thief has taken from you, out of his desperation to do what he did, may he benefit. And had that motivation and let go. So Lathi Rinchi said to me, let go. Release. Don't be attached. Don't be angry. It's gone. What can you do about it? And then he laughed a little bit more, and then he went right back to sleep. It's like one of those stories in the Mahasiddhas, you know, when things happen and these great masters were laughing and laughing, and that's not the reaction you're expecting. You're expecting some kind of like poor me story. You're like, oh, you know, I'm poor me, and they're supposed to console you, but you know, they're not getting involved in your pity party, but they're actually telling you that take this as the path, take this as the teaching, take this as a lesson. And you know what? After I put his blanket on him again, folded my hands to him, and Kenshin Rinchi, I put the blanket back on him and folded my hands, and the great, two great living Buddhas, you know, Lathi Rinchi and Kenshin Rinchi, really living Buddhas, went back to sleep, and I sat there, and the other monks went back to sleep, and I sat there and I meditated in the dark. And I said, you know, I have a choice. I can be upset, I can scream, you know, I can make noise, it's not going to help anything. I'm a monk, I'm a practicing Buddhist, and how should I think? And I'm sitting here in the presence of two of the greatest lamas of Tibet. Two of the greatest lamas to come out of Tibet that are living. And they're giving me a teaching. And Lathi Rinchi is telling me to let go. And he warned me that something's going to happen. Of course, he has clairvoyance. Everybody in Ganden knows Lathi Rinchi has clairvoyance. And so he warned me that something's going to happen. And then when it happened, he has the compassion to give me these teachings. And I was like, wow. So I meditated on all this, and tears dropped down my eyes, and I was very moved and I was very touched, and I made a sincere prayer. It wasn't a show, it wasn't, you know what, maybe I really made a prayer from my heart that whatever was in my bag was taken by people who were very poor, that's why they had to resort to stealing, and may they benefit, may the money benefit them. And I even was happy, you know, I was actually happy, because in my prayer book I have pictures of Hiruka, I have pictures of Ajugini, color pictures of Yamataka and Tsongkhapa and Manjushri and Green Tara, and I know that these Indian people will probably take the book, pull out the pictures and put it on the altar, because no matter what, they're very religious, they're very respectful. Indian people are very respectful towards religion. And you know what? I pray that the pictures of Hiruka and Tara and Vajugini and, you know, Shakyamuni and Yamataka will be on their altar, and their family will pray and plant some seeds of Dharma in their mind, and that their neighbors will do the same thing, and that these pictures of enlightened beings, although taken the wrong way, but still had the karma to reach their hands. I mean, it's in the middle of India, and we're in the middle of a village, and someone took these bags. I mean, talk about the karma they had to get these pictures. And I was very happy knowing that I know these people will probably put these pictures on their altar. And I was genuinely happy, and I let it go. And when we arrived in Hubli, Lati Rinchi asked me. He woke up and he asked me, because the next day we were arriving already, did you do the prayer that I told you to do? And I folded my hands and said, yes, I did. And I said, I did the prayer, I did the motivation, I understood his teaching. And then he said, very good. And everything was fine, and we went back to Gandin. And I guess what I'm trying to express in this story is how I learned how to let go, how I learned how to surrender, and that when the karma happens, when the situation happens, when this happens, to let go, to accept, and in fact, take the situation onto the path. Meaning, this negative thing has happened. This negative situation has happened. And I was very poor, and I didn't have anything. And even being very poor, not having anything, having my money and my bag stolen, I still was able to generate a kind of thinking that made it benefit the thief. And that came because of the compassion of Lati Rinchi. Can you imagine? I had the fortune to travel, to serve, and to be around these type of lamas. And I want to share that story with you while I'm riding on this beautiful trishaw in Penang, North Malaysia, with friends, going through this ancient, old, ex-colonial city. And I thought that it's kind of something that I learned, and I thought I wanted to share. I'm going to blog this ASAP. I'm going to put it on. And I hope you think about the story. It really happened to me. And this is kind of what transpired. And this is how I kind of learned to accept adversity and difficulties. Thanks.